evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 4th, 2014. President Kiir makes a one-day visit to Khartoum after this week's bombing of Raja.
There are also other items for them to discuss, including the BI dossier, the issue of security, and the 9 cooperation agreements. The implementation of 9 cooperation agreements has been very slow.
And rebel leader Riek Machar tells VOA he's confident a deal for power sharing transitional government will be worked out.
From the impression given to us by the IGAD leaders is that there could be an agreement on the structure of the transitional government. We need to ascertain that either at the peace talks or at the next coming summit.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir has traveled to Khartoum today for a one-day pre-scheduled visit to meet his Sudanese counterpart Omar al-Bashir. According to Mr. Kiir's spokesperson, the two leaders were expected to discuss the 2012 cooperation agreement between the two countries, the disputed territory of Abyei, and this week's bombing raid in western Barangay state, allegedly carried out by Sudanese warplanes. At least 20 South Sudanese were wounded in the attack. Ateny Wek Ateny tells Philip Aleu that President Kiir will also brief Mr. Bashir on the status of the South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia.
The reason for the President Salva Kiir visiting Khartoum came as a response to the invitation extended to him by President Omar al-Bashir. But on the wake of the breakthrough that the peace negotiation has reached in Baradar recently, President Salva Kiir also thought to brief President al-Bashir on that breakthrough, because Bashir is one of the 9 IGAD leaders that also needs to be informed about the progress in peace negotiation. There are also other items for them to discuss, including the BI dossier, the issue of security, and the 9 cooperation agreements. The implementation of 9 cooperation agreements has been very slow. So these are the things that the President Salva Kiir would want to discuss with his counterpart.
So when you say that there's now a breakthrough in Baradar where discussions are taking place in Ethiopia on the peace talks, does it mean that the peace is within the reach in the next few days or weeks?
There are still remaining some sticking points that the 30% of the whole item that are supposed to be discussed remained unresolved, because the parties have not agreed on them. The 70% is a breakthrough, by the way, because if you look at where the negotiation started, 70% is a big percentage that can, you know, make anybody to be optimistic about, you know, the signing of comprehensive peace agreement in any time.
Okay, talk about the security also between South Sudan and Sudan. There was a bombing recently in western Barangay state. Is it an issue that is also on the agenda?
President Salva Kiir will raise this, because there were some voices that were asking President not to travel to Khartoum as a protest for the recent bombing of areas in western Barangay, particularly in Raja County. But President, as you know, President is a man who always would want to extend olive branch to anyone. He thought that his traveling to Khartoum would help the bilateral relationship between the two countries, because the two countries have mutual interests that each of them have to protect. And so the president was there actually using this forum, the meeting between him and al-Bashir, to be able to raise issues of this kind.
Does South Sudan now believe that the bombing was coming from the Sudan? And if the president was to travel also when people are being bombed in his country, does it also show that he doesn't care about the civilian being targeted?
There's no any country that is that we can say is responsible for the bombardment that happened in Raja. If we are to blame anybody, then the best way is to blame no enemy at all, because the SPLM in opposition are not capable of using aerial bombardment against us. So the fact is for anyone to actually conclude that it was Khartoum that was bombing areas in Raja. The issue of civilian, Salva Kiir, is you know, cares about the civilian. That's a very difficult questions, because President Salva Kiir is known to any person here in South Sudan. The man is a humble man, and at the same time, he's a man who has a love, a great love for this nation. That is why he's always giving concession, you know, for the sake of people of South Sudan to live in harmoniously and in peace.
That was President Kiir's spokesperson, Ateny Wek Ateny, speaking to Philip Aleu earlier today in Juba.
Rebel leader Riek Machar says his group is working to end the more than 10 months of fighting in South Sudan. Riek says the IGAD heads of state have assured him of a breakthrough in the talks on the thorny issues of forming transitional government for South Sudan. He says his delegation at the IGAD-led negotiations will remain in the Ethiopian capital until a peace deal is signed with the government of South Sudan.
Our desire is to have peace in South Sudan, and that is why we accepted the mediation of IGAD, the regional body. And we have been engaged since January 1st, 2014, in this forum, seeking peace. And I joined my delegation in the search for peace under this forum. But there are difficulties in the forum. One is the interference of the IGAD summit in the negotiation process. At times, there is confusion. You don't know whether it is the summit that are the negotiators or it is their envoys, although we know it is their envoys who are the mediators. So this has caused a confusion, particularly on the 24th to the 25th of August, when the IGAD heads of state and government signed a protocol which was not agreed by the two warring parties.
What are some of these progress that were made in Bahar Dar?
Two main issues were discussed. One is the system of governance. As you know, we said we need to introduce reforms in the country for adopting a new system of governance. And this system of governance is federalism. It is a popular demand by people of South Sudan that a federal system be implemented in South Sudan. The second issue was the structure of the transitional government. To me, it is not the most important. The most important is to address the root causes of the conflict. Once you address the root causes, then you can have a transitional government which will implement what is agreed. But apparently, the region thinks that we must discuss the structure of the would-be transitional government. From the impression given to us by the IGAD leaders, is that there could be an agreement on the structure of the transitional government. We need to ascertain that either at the peace talks or at the next coming summit.
The issues surrounding the transitional government are still presenting itself in the talks there. One sticking issue is the powers of the prime minister. If the two parties are going to opt for a president, vice president, a prime minister, and two deputies, there were issues to do with the powers of the prime minister. Was that resolved?
The way you say it now creates concerns. The system which may work during the transitional period, I think, would be a system where there would be a president and a prime minister, not what you said, president, vice president, prime minister, two deputies. This system was experimented with in Kenya. It didn't work. It didn't succeed. We should not repeat mistakes made by others. We advocate during the transitional period a system where there would be president and prime minister. Then the powers can be divided between the two.
The government also talks the same language, saying we are ready to negotiate, we are ready to end this conflict, but the ball falls in the hands of the SPLM in opposition. And for that matter, they blame you and say your group is not very responsive. Recent case was when President Kiir was interviewed. He said your forces are still attacking his positions in Upper Nile and in Bentiu, despite the fact that you are sitting on the table.
you know who is on the offensive. Even now, you know that there's fighting south of Malakal. The government forces have crossed the river, attack our positions in Khorfulus. In any case, they have been beaten back. They also attacked some Zaraf, actually villages around there, and they have been beaten back. So we know that the government has been planning to resolve this matter through military means, because they're using the resources which would be used for support of development, humanitarian issues. They're using these resources to buy arms, and they've been busy buying arms. This is not a government that wants peace.
That's Riek Machar, leader of the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me from Johannesburg in South Africa earlier today.
This morning, hundreds of South Sudanese peace activists marched through the streets of Juba to call on the two parties engaged in South Sudan's latest conflict to end the fighting and let peace prevail. Mugume Davis Rakarinji has this report for VOA from Juba.
17-year-old Betty Amaru Francis loves school and believes she can make it all the way to the top if she can complete her studies and become an accountant. But Amaru Francis, a third-year student from Jubade Secondary School, has skipped class today. She's not sick, and she hasn't been expelled for lack of school fees. Rather, she's among a group of girls holding a banner aloft, pleading for peace in South Sudan. Amaru Francis believes that her action is the only way she'll be able to achieve her dream. She even prepared a speech for the occasion.
I would like to take this appalled moment to pledge to the international community, the two warring parties, and the religion-based group, as well as a civic society, that enough, enough for shedding the innocent blood of South Sudanese civilians. We need peace now. The people deserve durable and sustainable peace to pave a way for development, prosperity, and equality.
She is among hundreds of activists carrying placards, posters, and banners while marching behind the South Sudan police band, calling for an end to the nearly year-long deadly conflict. 38-year-old Wilson Kamaladin could not agree more with the impassioned young schoolgirl.
Peace is a pillar for development. This nation has been suffering all the generations since 1947 until right now. They never taste the fruit of peace. Therefore, it's very important that all of us should work all together as a collective responsibility in order to bring peace in this country and has a bite of a national cake.
Kamaladin is a teacher by profession and says it is important for him to participate in peaceful demonstrations because leaders need to understand how much children are suffering during the conflict due to lack of education.
We would like to send this very strong message to them that enough and is enough for shedding the blood of innocent South Sudanese. We need peace now before tomorrow because people are already tired. People have no any way out. People are looking forward for them in order to listen.
The United Nations estimates that about 2 million South Sudanese, primarily school-aged children, have been displaced since fighting began in December. Edmond Yakani is the executive director for Community for Empowerment Organization, one of the NGOs that organized this rally. He says the voices of South Sudanese youth are getting louder by the day.
It's a question to the leaders that the children are now fed up of this crisis, and that's why you see they are the huge number. And also if you see in our population, they represent a huge population. And if you see the consequence of the violence, it's much more on them as the children.
Activists have said the war causes psychological as well as economic hardships for children and youth. And they are determined to use any avenues of speech available to argue their leaders to remain at the table and fix the nation's problems. One of these empowered young activists is 18-year-old Kwech Deng Atem, a second-year student at Jubade Secondary School. In his poem, My Motherland, he's determined to speak up for his nation.
Oh, people of South Sudan, let's live together as children of one mother. Together as children of one father and develop our beautiful land. and say no for war, no for fighting, no for tribalism, and no for corruption, but yes for peace, yes for unity, yes for harmony, and yes for prosperity. Long live South Sudan.
For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
The arrest and detention and even killing of journalists is something the United Nations General Assembly wanted to publicly condemn by adopting the resolution on the safety of journalists on December 14, 2013. Philip Thornalew spoke with one South Sudanese journalist who told his story of repeated arrests and detention while the country commemorated the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists.
Jock Solomon, a photojournalist working for the Nation Media newspaper in Juba, woke up last Saturday morning and began his daily work with a fairly routine assignment. Word was spreading about the long queues seen at local fuel stations where motorists compete to fill their diesel or petrol tanks. Jock says that while taking photos, he was stopped by security agents who asked him if the Ministries of Information and National Security knew about his work.
So I told them I have the paper and also it's signed by the one of in charge of information and also for security. And after that, they said, no, what you are doing, it is not acceptable. It's, you destroy the image of the country.
Jock says he was interrogated for 4 hours before being released, but his camera was switched and he was told that the investigation into his activities continues. He says this is the fifth time he has had an issue with security officials for doing his job. Angelina Daniel, the director of the End Impunity Organization in South Sudan, says government officials should be held to account for restricting journalists who are guaranteed certain rights, including freedom of the press and freedom of expression.
Yeah, you know, the issue of arbitrary arrest that is happening. Like, just take the story that you heard here about it. Take the journalist from a studio, spend 3-2 days without any charge, and then say, go, thank you, that's it. For example, we have the story of the killing of the journalist in South Sudan in 2012. Up to now, I can tell you that I did not receive any last result, even it would include international level of investigation. I don't know who killed Abraham Isaiah, okay? Up to now. So this is kind of the culture of impunity.
Outspoken South Sudanese political commentator Isaiah Ding Abraham Chanawol was killed in front of his house on December 5th, 2012 by, according to authorities, unknown gunmen. Suspects have never been arrested. The United Nations General Assembly adopted Resolution 68, Stock 163, in December 2013, proclaiming November 2nd the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. The day was chosen in memory of the assassination of two French journalists in Mali on November 2nd, 2013. The event condemning impunity against journalists is separate from the original commemoration of the International Day to End Impunity, which is celebrated each year on November 23rd. The UN resolution addresses all attacks and violence against journalists and media workers. It also urges member states to do the utmost prevent violence against journalists and media workers, to ensure accountability, bring to justice perpetrators of crime against journalists and media workers, and ensure that victims have access to appropriate remedies. But Angelina Daniel says that so far, that has not been the case.
We have some people and journalists in the detention that even I don't know where they detained and for why they have been detained. I wanted to end by implementing the rule of law.
Angelina says the media laws signed by President Salva Kiir in September should help journalists to identify where the line they cannot cross lies. For BOA News, I am Philip Thornalew in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan launches another polio vaccination campaign. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it important to be honest at all times? Are there exceptions to this?
When you are honest, you are always respected by many people because it means that you do not paper people. You tell them whatever is wrong and whatever is right. So because of this, honesty is actually very important.
To me, we should always be honest. Sometimes you can make an appointment with someone tells you where are you, say I'm here when you are not there. So we should always be honest. If you can't make something, then tell the person that you can't make it.
But in some situations, you can lie. So when it comes to, for example, chasing after a girl, I mean, you cannot be honest all the time. You cannot really pour your heart out just like that. You have to lie in some instances to get her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about polio. The Central Equatorial State Minister of Health, Emmanuel Ijabaya, launched a four-day polio vaccination campaign today in Juba. It targets children under the age of five. Baya says efforts to keep the paralyzing disease out of the country must not be relaxed. But as Philip Tonaleu reports from Juba, there are many challenges to reaching every child during this campaign.
Jock Solomon, a photojournalist working for the Nation Mirror newspaper in Juba, woke up last Saturday morning and began his daily work with a fairly routine assignment. Word was spreading about the long queues seen at local fuel stations where motorists compete to fill their diesel or petrol tanks. Jock says that while taking photos, he was stopped by security agents who asked him if the Ministries of Information and National Security knew about his work.
So I told them I have the paper and also it's signed by the one of in charge of information and also for security. And after that, they said, no, what you are doing, it is not acceptable. It's, you destroy the image of the country.
We apologize for this mix-up in the tape, but we have now our health story about polio campaign in Central Equatorial State.
Baya says South Sudan conducts poor childhood vaccination campaigns each year. This latest polio vaccination outreach is the third for 2014, and the fourth will begin in December. Every state in South Sudan is responsible for designing its own vaccination campaign, Baya says. In Central Equatoria, more than 32,000 children are being targeted across the state's six counties, starting today and continuing through Friday. Baya says 2,024 health workers, including vaccinators and community outreach staff, have been hired.
It's a good number, because they have to go from house to house in all the counties of Central Equatorial State. It may be a problem because some of our houses are widespread, and it will give really a problem for the people, the vaccinators, because many of them have to walk. In the town, it's easier, but in the rural area, it's a bit difficult. But they will have to do it because this is what we have to do to save our children.
Baya says South Sudan's first polio vaccination campaign of 2014 occurred in April and the second in July. He says that since the last reported case of polio occurred in Terkega County in 2008, widespread routine vaccination is undertaken as a precaution.
We are having international borders where some of diseases, some of the polios might be brought in, say, from our borders with Uganda. We have Kaya in Morobo County. We have Ajio, Kajukeji County, Nyori in Yoi County. And of course, Juba International Airport is also one of the ways in which many people are coming to our state.
Children can also receive the vaccine at health centers and schools in case they are missed by the house-to-house teams, Baya says. This latest campaign is part of an increased effort to improve child health in the world's poorest countries through preventive strategies. For example, South Sudan became the 73rd country to launch the 5-in-1 childhood fenderbilate vaccine in July. The Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, or GAVI, has supported expanded immunization in South Sudan and other poor nations. Gavi funded the fenderbilate vaccine, which protects against diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, as well as hepatitis B. The government of South Sudan predicts that 450,000 children will receive pentavalent vaccine in the next 12 months. At today's polio vaccination campaign launch, State Minister Baya says South Sudan could reach its target of vaccinating all children under age 5 within a year if the public understands the process and responds positively.
Particularly mothers, they have to be waiting for the vaccinators in their houses so that the children are immunized. There will be marking of the houses so that the teams, when they come, they will know that this house has been visited and has got children. One child, will two children or four children, all will be marked, and whether they have been immunized or they are not immunized.
Bayer says all children, including those sheltering at the UN peacekeeping bases in Juba, will be eligible to receive vaccinations. But even with this significant outreach, other elite officials admit that some children roaming the streets of Juba and other South Sudanese towns without parental or guardianship care will be hard to reach. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
South Sudan took another significant step last week in its attempt to join the East African Community Regional Trading Bloc. It is hoped that the training will equip officials with the tools and knowledge needed to bolster international trade and commerce in South Sudan. From Juba, Mugume Davis Rakaringi has this report.
On Friday, members of the South Sudan EAC negotiating team committee took some time to review what they had learned during the week's workshop, which included sessions examining the policies and guidelines for joining the EAC. Mau Mau Athiankol, the committee's newly appointed Secretary General, summarized the training by emphasizing the benefits South Sudan could glean by joining the EAC.
East African Community will make it much easier and cheaper for South Sudan firms to export their products and services to the region. South Sudan cannot compete on the international market alone. Together with the East African Community, South Sudan stands a better chance.
But a prosperous economic climate can only be attained in a country free of conflict and insecurity. Athiankol reminded participants that joining the EAC could be crucial in moving the country away from conflict towards a unified purpose and identity. East Africa is fast becoming one of the world's most interesting oil and gas hotspots after Uganda and Kenya discovered oil prospects. The EAC bloc is composed of Burundi, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania and Rwanda, and has a combined population of more than 140 million people. Wanyama Masinde is a lecturer at the Center for Regional Integration, which organized this training. Masinde says the path toward joining the EAC is a gradual process.
What are they going to do to implement, and when are they going to implement? And that is what they'll negotiate. Whether some areas can be implemented right now or at that time, or some have already been implemented, because there's a lot that we have in common.
East African Community officials, led by the Secretary General Richard Sezibera, were in South Sudan in July this year to brief government officials and technocrats on the elements the EAC's accession process. The EAC has established a free trade area and a customs union, and is working toward a common market using a single currency and eventually achieving a federation. Committee member Majur Mayor Machar sees the overall region's steadily improving infrastructure as one of the key reasons that South Sudan should push for EAC inclusion.
It's what we call LAPSET project, where South Sudan is a member and we are going to benefit from that project.
Members of the East African Community don't have to pay for a visa to enter any of the member countries, compared to a $30 to $50 fee South Sudanese must now pay when visiting East African countries. Officials predict that joining the EAC would also reduce clearing time for goods entering South Sudan, which would bring down the cost of goods for consumers. Machar says South Sudan has a lot of unexploited potential that could be very attractive to other EAC member nations, thus boosting the economy significantly. South Sudan applied to join the EAC in 2011 and was largely expected to join the community this year. But the ongoing conflict has interrupted progress toward achieving that goal. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That report by Mugume Davis Ruakarinj brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also here in Washington. We're glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.